the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
We've made it to the fourth and final hour of Sports Talk with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. A lot coming away between now and 7 o'clock, including a conversation with former Alabama basketball coach Wimp Sanderson. Jimmy, he never fails to entertain.
No, I look forward to it. He was colorful when he was a coach at Alabama, and he has remained that way. And we always look forward to it. We've been able to build up a nice relationship with him, with reciprocating agreements and being on shows with him with us. But I always like his perspective on things, and he will tell you what he thinks.
That he will. So we look forward to that. Wimp will join us. Coach will join us around 6:35 or so. We also have a practice report with Eric Kane. But right now, it's your chance to win. It's the Sports Fix at 6.
And we've got a couple of tickets to see the Knoxville Ice Bears. These ticket vouchers are good for any of the remaining home games for the Ice Bears, and they've got a few more left, so you can check it out. It's really entertaining to go watch them play. It's a good brand of hockey. It's also fun. They have made it an event. Two ticket vouchers to see the Ice Bears if you can answer this trivia question. The Milwaukee Bucks are on pace to win 70 games this season. There are only two teams in the NBA during the regular season that have won 70 games. Name the two. Name the two NBA teams that have won at least 70 games during the regular season.
656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. We start with Danny. Hello, Danny. Let's see. Danny, you with us? I think we lost Danny. Let's go to Trey. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Trey.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Doing well, and you?
Not bad, thank you.
Good.
All right, let's go with the Bulls and the Warriors.
Yep, those are the two. We thought that might not be a real hard one, but Trey, I got to admit, when I first saw that on ESPN, my first thought went to the Lakers of Wilt Chamberlain. When he joined them, they won 69, and I was wrong. So I went Warriors and Lakers, and then when I looked it up, I'm like, oops. It was the Bulls. So the Bulls did it in 96. Golden State did it 20 years later. And winning 69 in a given season, you had the 72 Lakers with Chamberlain and Jerry West in that group. The Bulls won 69 in 97, and you had a couple teams that won 68. The Philadelphia Warriors, I'm trying to remember if they were the Warriors in or not. Back in 67, they moved to Golden State, but I can't remember for sure. Maybe they were the 76ers in, but they won 67 with Wilt Chamberlain. Then in the 73, Celtics won 73. In 73, won 68. So there have been two that have won more than 70, two that have won 69, two that have won 68. But you got it. It was Golden State and the Bulls. Congratulations. You have won two ticket vouchers to see the Ice Bears play any of their remaining home games. So, Trey, awesome. Congratulations to you, and hope you enjoy watching the hockey.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Way to go, Trey. And that takes care of the Sports Fix at 6. Hang on the line so we can get your prize information. Founded originally as the Syracuse Nationals, they became the Philadelphia 76ers in 1963.
63, okay. I thought at one time they were the Warriors. Okay, but that's not right.
Well,
then.
It was another franchise.
Okay.
That was in Philadelphia and then made the move to the West Coast.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. But I did remember that team. I can actually remember a lot of the starters on that Philadelphia team in 67. It was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the Boston Celtics were fantastic then. And that team in Philadelphia, if the Celtics won something like, I don't know, 10 and 11 years. And the 76ers, that Philadelphia team, was the one that stopped that streak with Chamberlain and they had Billy Cunningham coming off the bench, Lucius Jackson, Hal Greer, Wally Jones. That was a tremendous team. Of course, the Celtics were loaded, too, with Bill Russell and that cast of characters he had. But you had to go from 1973 to 1996 to find a team that threatened that 70-win threshold.
That's right. And they were founded as the Philadelphia Warriors in 46, moved to San Francisco in 62,
okay.
and then became known as the Golden State Warriors in 71.
Okay. I wasn't just completely out of my mind, a few years off.
Just right there and just a little bit of overlap, we both operate in that instance. And for those of you that haven't encountered it yet, it's on the truck.
That's right.
May not be here anytime soon, but it's coming.
And you will not escape it.
No, not one bit.
It's going to happen.
That's right.
So get ready.
Father Time remains undefeated.
Oh, he's been visiting me too often. Anyway, I thought that was an interesting look. But Milwaukee's a team, they have one superstar, right? And then they have a lot of really good players around them.
They really do.
And Chris Middleton can play, and some of these other guys, and they have good chemistry about them. The one thing Giannis wanted to do is improve his three-point shooting. He has done that. He's just a fantastic basketball player, and you can make the argument that he's the best player in the game now. You can make the argument.
Right.
Lott would still take is LeBron 35, 34, 35?
Yeah.
He's in that range. And then, of course, Durant's not playing this year, but he's one that would be up there. Steph Curry hasn't been playing. Kawhi Leonard, I don't think, is having as good a year this year as last year. He hadn't been playing as many games either, sitting out a lot. So
December 30th, LeBron turned 35. So that's,
okay.
But Steph's not the best player in the game in terms of all around.
No.
He's an outstanding player. He's a great player.
Right. If when you start talking about him, his name would come up in the top 10. Right?
Fair. Maybe yours.
Yeah, he would. I did mention yesterday he was free for contact and you could hit him.
That's right.
Yeah. He's been cleared for contact. Go ahead, take a shot. And look, there are a lot of great players. I don't know how many would put Russell Westbrook in there, but my gosh, the guy recently averaged a triple-double.
Mm-hmm.
Harden would be hard for me to put in there because he doesn't play a lick of defense.
Correct.
But offensively, he's a little bit like Curry. Great offensive player. And isn't going to give you a whole lot else, but great offensive player. So, I think Giannis is just spectacular. I think he's a fantastic player. If I were starting a franchise right now, given his age, he might be the guy to take.
I think when you set it up that way, I agree entirely that Giannis would be my top pick.
I remember I was at a Tennessee basketball game about 3 years ago. And they had an overflow for, I think it was a Kentucky game. And so I sat in the overflow area, and it's with scouts. And I sat next to a scout of the Milwaukee Bucks. And I asked him about Giannis. Now, keep in mind, it's about 3 years ago. And he was telling me how good this guy's going to be. He said, this guy was he was sweeping streets just a few years ago. And he has just come along and is just, he said, this guy's going to be a superstar. And you just watch. And, of course, he has turned into that.
Yeah. And I hope that Milwaukee finds a way to keep him, because I would really like to see them be able to benefit from such an incredible talent.
In my opinion, he's the best talent they've had since Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yep.
And Jabbar left after a few years to go to the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
And so to what you're talking about, that's what you would hope they don't lose. They can win the NBA title now. I don't know if they will, but if I had to pick somebody right now, that would be my favorite. I like the way they're playing. The other argument to me would be the Lakers because of their experience. When you've got two guys as good as James and Davis,
mm-hmm.
that's hard to beat. But the way Milwaukee plays, I think they're right there with them. I wouldn't be surprised. And, of course, their record would indicate that. But just overall, I think that Milwaukee team is outstanding.
Let's get a call from Mike. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Mike.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm well. Hey, I'm going to show my ignorance on baseball, but I have a question for you. When I hear the term a walk-off single or a walk-off home run, what does that mean when you say walk-off?
That means it is the game-winning and ending play. When it's a walk-off, it could be the bottom of the ninth or, in extra innings, the bottom of the 10th, 11th, and so on. You can have game-winning hits that would be in the top half of an inning, but it's not immediately game-winning. It could be what proved to be the game-winning, but a walk-off hit, home run, single. Tennessee even had a couple of walk-off walks against Alabama in a series 2 years ago. So it is the play that ends the game when it's referred to as a walk-off.
And obviously it's got to be the home team or the team batting in the bottom of the inning. Yeah.
Unless it's a tournament.
Yeah.
Neutral site.
The last team batting.
That's it.
Yeah. Okay, well, I certainly appreciate that. I've heard that term. I've heard you guys mention it several times, and I don't keep up that much with baseball, but I finally decided to call and find out what it means.
Yeah, in fact, the Lady Vols softball team won in walk-off fashion last night with a run to beat UT Martin in the bottom of the seventh.
Sweet. All righty. Well, you guys have a good evening. Thank you very much, Mike.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you listening and the call. We'll get a break and be back with a practice report from Eric Kane. And I tell you what, failed to do this when we were supposed to do it last hour. So what we're going to do right now is give you an opportunity to qualify for the grand prize drawing that will be the Coors Light Climb to a Championship. The grand prize winner will be on their way to Nashville for the upcoming men's tournament March 11th through the 15th with two all-game passes along with $500 spending money. So right now, be caller number 5 at 656-WINS. Caller number 5 at 656-9467, and you'll be our qualifier for the Coors Light Climb to the Championship for today's edition of Sports Talk. Caller number 5, 656-9467. Caller number 5, 656-WINS. Sports Talk continues on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
To take the latest on Tennessee sports coverage with you anywhere you go, download the Sports Radio WNML app. Powered by Big Kahuna Wings, the wings that changed it all.
We say congratulations to David, who is our latest qualifier for the Coors Light Climb to the Championship. Grand prize will be given away March 6th, so you still have time to get qualified. In fact, Jimmy, when we are at Oak Ridge Nissan later this week, folks will have the opportunity to come by and get registered there.
Yeah, it's a tremendous prize. You're going to have an opportunity to see a lot of basketball games. And as crazy as this league has been during the regular season, who knows what's going to happen? The only thing that seems to be a given every year is that Kentucky's going to play well.
Yes.
Other than that, who knows?
Yeah.
So, and then you can go there and pull against Kentucky.
100%. And can also tell you that your next opportunity to become a qualifier will come tomorrow morning between 6 and 9 with the starting lineup with Tyler Ivins, Will West, and Eric Kane. Speaking of Eric Kane, not everyone here likes to do that, but anyhow, here is a practice report. It's brought to you by Pools by Heritage. Eric, what's going on?
Eric Kane with the Pools by Heritage Tennessee Basketball Practice Report. Tennessee travels to Arkansas tonight, 8:30 tip-off. 8 o'clock is when the Vol Radio Network will take over our airwaves. It'll be the second meeting between Tennessee and Arkansas this season. Just a couple weeks ago in early February, the Volunteers tied a season high of 82 points in an 82-61 win on February the 11th. That game was inside Thompson Bowling Arena. Santiago Vescovi scored a career high of 20 points, while five different Volunteer players scored in double figures. This time around, it's a 68% chance of victory per the ESPN matchup predictor for the homestanding Razorbacks of Arkansas, who average 74 points a game, shoot 43% from the field. However, Arkansas is only 1-5 in their last six ball games. Big difference this time around will be the return of guard Isaiah Joe, who averages 16 points a game, had 21 points in 37 minutes on Saturday when he returned to action against Missouri after missing a couple weeks with a knee injury, including that first matchup against Tennessee.
Spreads the floor because he's going to shoot it deep, and he's got great range, and they have given him the ultimate green light to get shots, and they work to get him shots, and so there will be a different team there than they were here.
That was Rick Barnes Monday in a press conference setting, speaking on Isaiah Joe, who again will be in the lineup for the Razorbacks tonight for coming off a really impressive outing against Missouri in his return to action. Arkansas was one of the better teams in non-conference play, sitting as the first four out in Joe Lenardi's recent bubble, predicting postseason bracketology across NCAA basketball, but have really struggled in SEC play. 5-9 is the record. The SEC wins for Arkansas this season have come against Texas A&M, Ole Miss, Vanderbilt, Alabama, and Missouri, with losses against LSU, Kentucky, Mississippi State, South Carolina, Auburn, Missouri, Tennessee, Florida, and Mississippi State once again. But it's going to be a challenge for Tennessee. Rick Barnes knows that, especially when the Volunteers have struggled in recent memory to close out games and turn the basketball over.
Well, again, we know we're going to have to defend them at all three levels when you think about it, but we're going to have to be locked in on, with our transition defense, got to be locked into personnel, going to have to rebound. But again, if we don't take care of the ball, again, we're going to have those same issues. I mean, they're going to come up again at some point in time. I don't care if you got a lead, you're playing from behind, You expect the other team to make a push. You expect to see momentum change here or there. We've got to take care of the ball during those parts of the game where we are not just going to give the ball just, you know, just, you can't. You got to execute and take care of the ball.
Tip-off for the Volunteers and Razorbacks in Fayetteville will be tonight, 8:30. Ball Radio Network coverage begins at 8 o'clock right here on The Sports Animal. Today's UT Basketball Practice Report is brought to you by Pools by Heritage. It's today and every day. You can get your pool started now, beating the spring rush by calling 947-7527 or visiting Pools by Heritage online at poolsbyheritage.com.
Thank you very much, Eric Kane. And so that is a practice report. We'll catch up with Eric again tomorrow.
I was visiting with some folks recently, and we were discussing Philip Fulmer, the athletic director. There was a long article in the Tennessean about him. He talked about how he felt like he was doing a good job, but we were looking at some of the situations. One of the things an athletic director has to do is find coaches to run programs. And when I look around at Tennessee right now, I think they're in really good shape. I think Kelly Harper's done all right this first year. We'll see. Time will tell, but certainly there's no concern about her at this point. And as far as being able to hang around for a few more years, I think Jeremy Pruitt's off on the right foot. Rick Barnes, really good basketball coach. He's Hall of Famer. You look at what the Weeklies have done in softball. You look at what Tony Vitello has done in baseball. You look at what Matt Kredich has done with the men's and women's swimming program. Outstanding. Men's and women's golf. Judy Pavone has been there at least 20 years. I think she and Lisa Glenn in rowing probably are the senior coaches over there.
That's right. With Glenn, I think, just by a nose.
So you've got those two that have had success. Brennan Webb on the men's side has done a nice job. Eve Reichman's her first year with volleyball. Was it first year?
Her second.
Her first year, I was going to say, made the run in the NCAA
That's
tournament.
That's right. An outstanding debut. Finished second in the Southeastern Conference. Made the NCAA tournament this past year. Didn't meet the preseason expectations.
Yeah.
And they had some difficulties they encountered.
They did, but year one was very good. In tennis, you got Allison Ojeda and Chris Woodruff leading those programs. And they're ranked. The men are ranked number 10, I think, right now. They're having a nice year.
Yes.
Really a nice year. Kind of going under the radar a little bit, but they're really good. So when you look at all of that, and then you got track and field and cross country, that encompasses about indoor, out. That's about six sports right there, isn't it? Indoor, outdoor, men, women, cross country.
That's right. It would be six different seasons.
Yeah, and they've had mixed success there. In some areas, they're pretty good. In some areas, they've lacked. I don't know that cross country's been all that good.
No, they've had outstanding individuals.
Yes.
And that have competed for SEC championships as individuals.
Yeah.
But you're right. As far as the team, it's been rounding into shape. The Vols right now are ranked eighth in track.
In track?
Yes.
They've got an outstanding high jumper in Sullivan. They had a triple jumper that just set a recent record. So they're good individually. Again, team-wise, they probably could have done a little bit better. But the point is, looking at the coaching staff at Tennessee with all of the sports that they field, they're in pretty good shape.
I don't think there's any question that you see so much positive momentum for the programs that have been trying to build for a little while, as well as the teams that have been able to sustain success. It was interesting. We have a poll question out there that you can find at 99.1 The Sports Animal on Twitter as to what team right now is performing the best for the University of Tennessee. And I think if you're talking about the last decade, the most consistent team has been the Weeklies. It has been the softball team with what they've done in getting to College World Series, Super Regionals, NCAA tournaments, you name it. So over the last decade, it would be Tennessee softball. I think right now, if you're talking about here and now, it would be swimming.
Yeah, women, with the women, too.
Yes.
The men were sixth, I think, in the SEC?
They were sixth in the SEC, I think, after finishing third last year. They finished sixth in this most recent round of championships. But they are number 12 in the country, and the Lady Vols are third.
Yeah.
So I think Tennessee swimming right now would be the program that has performed the best, that is performing the best as we speak. And I don't think there's any question you got an uptick, a serious uptick with baseball, with what the start they're off to.
Yeah.
But obviously that's something that is
found out or meted out when you get to conference play in the teeth of the Southeastern Conference.
They're certainly heading in the right direction.
So, very much so.
But our discussion about Fulmer and the coaches, it's not like he's sitting there with having to think about having to replace five or six coaches. No.
Correct.
No, they're in really good shape right now. And that's got to be settling for the athletic department and for the athletic director.
And when you have that kind of success, that's also something that helps you build that rainy day fund and get projects done and upgrades and all kinds of things.
Right. And you can avoid those nasty buyouts.
Yes.
Yeah.
That also helps with the bottom line. Yeah. Some folks still drawing a check, courtesy of the orange and white. We'll get a break. When we return, Wim Sanderson joins us as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
You ever notice how stations that promote less talk never actually say anything worth hearing in the first place? We talk sports all the time. 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams, and it's a pleasure to go now to the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline, Jimmy, where a special guest joins us now.
We are pleased to be joined by Wim Sanderson, former head coach at Alabama, had great success with the Crimson Tide, and he's a guy, when that SEC tournament came around, his teams were just terrific. Wim, how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on. I hope I can give you some information.
Well, thank you for joining us. And I wanted to ask you, I know that the game of basketball has evolved, but you got an Alabama team that they had like a four-game stretch where they averaged over 43-point attempts per game. Do you cringe when you see that?
No, not really. I think when he inherited this team, he wanted to play that way. Mm-hmm. And he was fortunate enough that when he got here, he had four basketball players that could shoot it like that. He had one that he brought in from West Virginia, the Bolden kid. And that's the way he wants to play. Probably the best way for him to play, provided they can do a little bit better job late in games. And, you know, they're averaging 11 threes a game made. And they're shooting somewhere in the neighborhood of early 30s, 35 per game. So I think you take your personnel and try to study them and see, you know, best way to play. And let me tell you something, Alabama basketball fans like all of that because everybody likes home runs and long passes and, you know, three-point shots.
When you do that, do you need to have a big man to help you clean up the boards, get some rebounds? And if so, is Hubert Jones that guy?
Well, I think you do. He's been injured, but they've been pretty good rebounding, and actually they've been pretty good at the free-throw line. So many times that when you shoot a lot of threes, you don't go to the free-throw line very much, but Alabama has. I'm not here to toot their horn. I'm here to be honest with you about everything that you asked me. But I think probably he's pretty fortunate. If he wants to play that way and he walks into Alabama and Alabama's got one shooter, he's 88. He's not going to win the game.
Right.
They're just very fortunate that they had recruited a kid, the Shackelford kid from California. He didn't. The four of the five were here when he got here. So, you know, that's pretty fortunate for them. And I would say that he's done a pretty good job with it. And, they've had injuries just as everybody else has had injuries, and it's going to be interesting last three or four games of the season. Of course, Tennessee's at Arkansas tonight. Right now, if it stood today, right this minute, Alabama and Tennessee would play in the 8-9 game at 12 o'clock on Thursday, but that certainly may change in the next four games.
Last year, Auburn made the Final Four as Bruce Pearl guided the Tigers there.
Wow.
They lost three really good players, two guards and then a Kiki. And here they are this year. They're 24 and 4, I think. Are you surprised by the success Auburn's having this year coming off of last year?
Yeah, a little bit. I think they don't shoot the three as well. They got bombed by Alabama, bombed by Florida, got beat at Missouri. You know, so three big losses. They got beat at Georgia. But they've played well. They're going to be probably a 4-5 seed in the NCAA tournament. They're going to end up second to Kentucky. Kentucky's going to win it all, and Kentucky will beat them this coming Saturday in Lexington. So I would say, yes, they've done a good job with their team. He does a good job coaching. He's very, you know, charismatic. The crowd comes, 9,500 come and fill the place up, and they're much better at home. So, you know, I got to give them credit, certainly. I don't have to, but I do give them credit because they're darn good.
last year, the Southeastern Conference did a great job of getting teams into the field of 68. Yep. Looks like it's been a bit of a step back. Why do you think there's been more feast or famine for the SEC this year?
I don't know that we've got. Yeah, I don't know, John, that we've got anybody that's really just head and shoulders. The best team that's playing the best right now is Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Cal's got them playing very hard. They're playing very smart. They're shooting the basketball well, and they are distributing the basketball among themselves. I think to answer your question, we got a bunch of teams that are sort of alike. The selection committee will have a hard job getting time to decide who will be the 68. It won't be easy. I would say in the SEC, and I asked you this, but it sort of goes with your question, maybe Mississippi State might slide in. They might slide in and make five. Mississippi State doesn't play to their potential, in my opinion. Alabama probably would have won that game last night if Petty hadn't gotten hurt. Now I'm not pushing Alabama. It doesn't matter. South Carolina, maybe, but I would think that to answer your question, we're seeing over the long haul of everything. You know, Kansas beats Baylor, yet Baylor's going to be a number one seed. San Diego, who we've never heard of, is going to be a number one seed. It's pretty much parity over the whole United States basketball wise.
Folks in Gainesville have been waiting for this team to hit its stride. You had the top target among all possible graduate transfers and transfer portal guys in Blackshear, who joined a very talented incoming class of freshmen for Mike White. What's it like when you try and mix veteran talent that joins a program with this new day and age with the transfer portal, along with young guys that still have to get some experience?
Well, of course you like it because he's a very talented kid. He maybe has not played as well as he should have or could have from Virginia Tech, but he's very talented. You're happy to have him, and the portal is going to be for another day. One of these days you can call me back, and we'll get into a big discussion about that. But the portal deal certainly was good for Florida there, and Florida's been an up-and-down basketball team. They've beaten some good teams, yet they still have to go. They have Kentucky at home, which is good for them. And I would say, if I had to guess to you guys, they'd be not looking at Joe's lately, I'd say are 9, 10, or 12 a seed in the NCAA tournament. But it's good to have a guy like that, provided he can come in and play maybe a little bit better than he's played.
Our guest, Wimp Sanderson. Wimp, when you look at Tennessee, they had two outstanding years in a row, yep. Lost some very good players, struggling this year. What's your take on the Vols?
Well, averaging, I think, somewhere in the late 60s, 67 points a game, lost a lot of players. Vescovia, however you pronounce it, has come in and helped them some. I think they've played okay. I thought they played better. Of course, they pretty much got annihilated in the second half against Auburn. But I thought they distributed the basketball a little bit better. They came out and made some big shots. And I think they've done okay. They're going to be 7, 8, 9, or 10 team, 10 seed in the SEC tournament. But you got to give them a lot of credit for playing the way they have. He's done a nice job with them. They're just not quite as good. And when you lose that many people, I understand that Rick's really had a good recruiting year, so they'll be back next year. I would say this is sort of a year in between a good year, and maybe it's going to be an exciting year next year. This year is not going to be an NCAA team unless they can win it. But I would certainly give Rick's team a lot of credit for playing hard. And I know he got disgusted with them in the second half of the Auburn game, and I think I did too watching it. But it was one of those things.
The three-point line was moved back to the international distance. It's the worst three-point shooting percentage since it was enacted in 1986-87. Were you in favor of that move, or do you think they should have left it where they had it?
I was in favor of it. I think they needed to. You know, the team that's going to win the league this year, Kentucky, is shooting a shot the least. I think they're averaging a little over 14 threes a game. So you play the way you need to play, which is the best way for them to play. A big kid inside has played better. They're shooters. Quintley kid last night just burned it up. He's very, very good and gotten better. So I think you look at the line and decide how your team needs to play. And I think with Cal's team, that was the best way for them to play. And for Alabama, I guess the best way for them to play is the way they play. And Auburn's in between there, and probably Tennessee is less than that as far as looking to shoot the three. So I don't know. Arkansas plays tonight against Tennessee, and Arkansas is the best defensive team against the three. And so I don't know how many threes Rick and them plan to take. But I think moving it back is better. I think it's a little bit better myself. Defend the dribblers is a big thing. Excuse me.
I've heard people say that, well, most of the time you're seeing three-point attempts or dunks. The mid-range game is a lost art. Do you agree with that? And if you do, does it bother you?
Well, it bothers me a little bit. I would play with a post player. Now, I had Robert Ory, Derek McKee. I had good players in the post. That's what I was supposed to have. So, you know, you always said I had good players. I thought that's what I was supposed to have, was good players. So Robert Ory and those guys, we took it inside to them, Mule King. Before I became the head coach, we had good post players. So I think that you need them. You know, you can go through the post and still shoot threes. Yeah. The postman has the ability to throw the ball to the weak side. If he catches on the left side, he can grab it, spin around, and throw it to the right side where the defense doesn't get back. So you can still shoot. I just think you need to go through the post some. Alabama doesn't have really great post people. They struggle there in that area. But I missed the two-point shots a little bit, but for Alabama, it's three-point shots and fast breaks and layups, and not in much in between, and maybe that's hurt them a little bit.
Coach, you mentioned Santiago Vescovi earlier, and you look at a young man that has done as well as he can as a young 18-year-old joining the team at the time SEC play started, and you still have a lot of those wild attempts at making incredible highlight reel plays, but every now and then... on a somewhat too consistent basis, he gets airborne and doesn't have any idea where he's going with the basketball. When you have a young player that's got a high ceiling and the ability to make big plays either by himself or to his teammates, how do you get that to the point where you grow this young man into a better decision maker in terms of what he's doing, when and where with the basketball?
Well, after you've lost all your hair, I'm not sure what you do. But I think one of the things that you do is when that happens in practice, you stop it right there. You stop it, and you try to get him to understand that he shot a quick shot or a bad shot, and some guy was open right in the basket. He didn't see him, and you try to correct it right there. I don't necessarily mean you run him and penalize him, but you just try to get his awareness. That's all he's ever done. You know, I used to laugh about a couple of my players that only shot when they had the ball. It's hard to get guys like that to fit in. He comes in the middle of the year and, trying to fit in with these guys, and he's played a different way. And Rick and them have gotten a lot of good use out of the guy, and I think he's a very good basketball player. And when you mix him in with these kids are getting next year, I don't want to overlook the Arkansas game. I don't want to overlook the tournament is your chance to go back to the NCAA tournament. We were fortunate enough in the 12 years I had the job to get in the finals 9 times. That's not bad for us. So gave us a chance to get there in case we weren't going there. So I think it's important that you keep your guys playing and understand that we still, if I tell you, if you win the next 3 games in the tournament, you're going to the NCAA tournament, you'd be excited. So I think you point towards that and you try to correct him. Great question. And try to make him play a little bit better the way your team needs to play.
What has it been like to see Jerry Stackhouse take over Vanderbilt, a program that lost every game last year, has just one win this year, but you can see, I think, some improvement among those players after losing their best player to injury earlier in the year?
You want honesty?
Yes, sir.
No, not very good. I don't think a pro guy can come in unless he understands that he has to recruit. And I know that he got the kid hurt, and that's a shame. I just think that when you get a kid hurt and your team is lacking on ability, that you have to decide a way for your team to play to give you the best chance to win. I don't think Vanderbilt does that. I think they snip it and go it, and if you shoot it five, it doesn't go in five. Got no post players. I just don't like the way they play. In my lifetime, and I've been an SEC guy for all my life, coached for two other guys for 20 years. You tell me, you're going to wake me up from the dead and tell me that 1 year Vanderbilt didn't win a conference game and the next year they won one, or whether they won, I'd faint. I don't think that they've taken what personnel they've had and done the best job with it. Now, I may get blasted by all the Vanderbilt people. That's fine. But I just don't think they have. That's the answer to the question you asked me. Now, it could be wrong. I just don't think that you have even though you were a great player, and you were recruited, and you did all these good things. You have to play the game where the other team doesn't get so many shots, and you get a few better, and you milk the clock a little bit. You don't play like that, in my opinion.
Did want to take just a quick minute.
Sorry.
Well, no, it's quite all right. Very much appreciate your insight into college ball, but I also appreciate your willingness to lend a helping hand. There's a young man that you're helping him come back as best possible from a very tragic situation. If you would, tell us what's going on with Landon Godsey.
Well, Landon Godsey is a young man who my dad died when I was six, and my grandmother and granddad lived in a little town called Town Creek. And my mother would take me up there to see them, and so a Town Creek's a little bitty place. I found out that the storm, they were in a trailer, he and his mother and daddy out. Mother and daddy were killed. He was laying in the woods, and they got him and air rushed him to Birmingham. And ever since that time, I have been doing everything. I've been going up there once or twice a week, and seeing the kid, took him all this Alabama stuff because he's an Alabama fan and those things. I'd have taken him to Auburn if he'd been an Auburn fan. So bought him some hard hats and did things for him, and we've raised about $30,000 to $35,000, and he's at the Children's Hospital in Birmingham. It means more than you'll ever know for you to mention this. Not for me. I've got a bunch of kids, but this kid woke up Christmas Eve. There wasn't any presents under there, and he lost his mother and daddy. And if they want to help to GoMe fund in Moulton, Alabama, for Landon Godsey, I'd be thrilled to death. And I can't thank you enough for mentioning that to me. I appreciate it.
How old is Landon?
He's 10. He doesn't know me from Adam's house cat. But I went up there and held his hand, and he's laying on his back trying to teach him to walk again. He cannot talk yet. He cannot talk, and I don't know whether he knows that he's lost his mother and daddy or not. I'm not going to be there when they tell him, because I'm not that good at it. I may never have a smile on my face, but I've struggled with that. So
well, it's amazing anyway, how much effort you've put into this.
Yeah, it really
is.
Well,
I've tried to, and hopefully we'll see some good come out of it. And I'm going to keep working at him. And I told him I'd take him to a basketball game, not this year, of course, but sometime, and let him meet Coach Saban. Those kind of, they like all those football guys love that stuff. So. I thank you again for what you said.
Well, Wimp, thank you so much for joining us, and hopefully we'll have a chance to visit with you during the NCAA tournament.
Well, hey, by the way, thank you all for not mentioning the strength coach going to Georgia. let me congratulate both of you.
Hey, that's football, man.
Because I thought sure the win I was going to get. I wrote some things down for you. They're going to nail me with that strength coach going to Georgia. I'll tell you what. Thanks a lot. I'd rather talk about Landon than the strength coach going to Georgia.
Hey, Wimp, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, guys. Call me anytime.
Yes, sir. Right.
Thank you, Coach.
Bye. That's Wimp Sanderson, former head coach at Alabama. And as he mentioned, I knew he did great in the SEC tournament. 9 of his 12 years, they made the SEC tournament finals at Alabama.
Yeah, and he joins us on the Stanley Fence and Gates hotline. And if you wanted to, just send a little something to help out Landon Godsey and his recovery efforts with the GoFundMe account. Just go to Coach's Twitter account, @WimpSanderson1, @WimpSanderson1. And if you scroll down his timeline, you'll find a link that you could be able to lend a helping hand should you choose to. But it's great to see him reaching out the way he is with this, again, terrible situation. We'll get a break and be back with a final segment to today's edition of Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
The runaway number one in East Tennessee for sports. We are 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Final segment to today's edition of Sports Talk with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. They play in the bottom of the eighth at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. Tennessee 12, UNC Asheville 1. And the Bulldogs have been the most recent team to score. So Tennessee scored the first 12. Asheville on the board before it heads back over the mountains. But Volunteers trying to get to 9-0 with today's game.
What's the most runs Tennessee's given up in a game this year? Is it 2?
Let's
or 3,
see.
Maybe?
They gave up 4 to Houston.
4. Okay, that's it.
And they gave up 4 in the finale to Western Illinois.
Okay. Oh, but okay. Yeah, I forgot about that one. Yeah, okay.
But that was 23-4.
yeah, okay.
And it was 8-4 when they beat the Cougars on Saturday.
Tennessee taking on Arkansas tonight. I don't like Jordan Bowden's not going to have another game like he did against Auburn, likely, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I think he can play well. He's been on a pretty good streak. He leads the team in scoring in SEC road games. But I think Bowden has to have a good game. Fulkerson has to play better than he did against Auburn. And I think the next key is Vescovi, even more so than Pons. Your point guard, he's got to play well. He's got to limit turnovers. He's made a three in every game he's played at Tennessee. He's not going to bring a lot defensively. I get that. But offensively, he can help this. He can help Tennessee. He's a pretty good passer. He's racked up a few assists. But I think he is the third. He is one of the three biggest keys for Tennessee. Yes, you'd like for Pons to come in and give you 10 points and 5 rebounds. And Josiah James, you'd like to see him be a little bit more aggressive. But I think Vescovi is one of the three biggest keys for Tennessee as far as individual players tonight.
Yeah, and as we talked about with Coach Sanderson, as we talked about with Mark Pankratz, Rob Lewis, he's just got to be able to stay on the floor.
Yeah.
And the way he comes off the floor is if he gets in foul trouble or if he turns the ball over too much.
Yeah, and he made that silly foul against Auburn that I thought was really crucial. But he's still a freshman. We've got to remember that.
Exactly. He arrived, a young 18.
Yeah, December 18, he arrives in Knoxville. And I think under the circumstances, he's done a very good job. Still doesn't mean he can't get better, though.
Correct. And just think of where Tennessee would be without him.
Yeah, they'd really be struggling.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's going to do it for today's edition of Sports Talk. Again, to remind you, up next, it'll be the Starting 11 with Will West, and that'll air from 7 until 8, and then Vol Network coverage begins as tonight Tennessee takes on Arkansas.